very, very nuts. I feel bad for
him. The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, October 14th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. And, Chet, we finally have a chance to have some good talk about the Eagles after a nice 39-17 win over Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. We've got the Flyers to talk about, the MLB playoffs that are going on right now with one of the craziest innings that you've ever seen. We'll jump right on that. And the NBA is right around the corner.
Yeah, Bill, fall is always a great time for sports. I mean, these playoffs are nuts. Three game fives this week, and this Rangers-Jays game that is finishing up right now as we go on the air is just one of the wildest games I've ever seen. But it's good to be talking about the Birds and a three-touchdown victory instead of a brutal loss.
It sure is, and what a better way to talk Philly sports and with our guest tonight, Philadelphia Inquirer's award-winning columnist, making his first visit to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, Mike Seals. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, Chet, let's go ahead and let's talk a little bit. I think Mike had a chance to watch some of that game, as did you and I after work, and let's jump right on that a little bit.
Yeah, Mike, one of the craziest seventh innings. that was just nuts. I mean, the seventh inning took like an hour. All sorts of controversies, and then Hamels getting lifted and a three-run homer that put Toronto ahead. What do you make of this game?
I make exactly what you said. I mean, it gets to the heart of, you know, something a colleague of mine, Ryan Lawrence from the Daily News, just tweeted a couple minutes ago, which is, you know, you leave your best pitcher in an elimination game as long as you possibly can. And They took Hamels out before they had to take him out. I mean, let's face it, that inning, you know, the bottom of that inning and the defense that the Rangers played on the infield was just abysmal. You know, never forget the top of the inning, you know, where the Rangers get the go-ahead run because the Jays catcher throws the ball back to the pitcher and hits, you know,
that was nuts.
Chew in the bat, you know, and all that stuff. But, you know, Hamels just pitched in terrible luck in that inning. And, you know, the Rangers infield allowed the Jays to tie the game. Then you take Hamels out with runners on base, bring in a relief pitcher, and Jose Bautista hits one from Toronto to, you know, Saskatchewan for a three-run homer and a 6-3 Jays lead. So, yeah, it's nuts. I mean, you know, we're only through seven. Who knows what's going to happen in the eighth, ninth?
And that's what Bill said to me, that you don't take Hamels out there. I mean, there's no tomorrow. You leave him in. And I'm glad you agree with us, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, that's there's no tomorrows. Yeah, it's nuts to
do that. Yeah, and he had thrown three ground balls and a bunt. I mean, every ball he threw or that they hit should have been out. So he threw three ground balls and a bunt. You're taking out – you might want to take out those other guys surrounding him.
That's just it. I mean, there's no tomorrow here. It's not like, you know, this is kind of the old-timey kind of managing that you see less and less of, I think, in Major League Baseball. It's part of the reason Matt Williams got fired by the Nationals this year, is this idea of, well, it's the seventh inning or it's the sixth inning, and therefore I'm going to use the guy who pitches the seventh or sixth inning. Well, you know, it's the playoffs. It's the most important inning of the entire season. Are you going to go down with Cole Hamels? Are you going to go down with maybe your best relief pitcher? Or are you going to go down with the guy who always pitches the sixth or seventh inning? That's medieval thinking, if you think about it. And there was no reason to take Hamels out there. Like you guys said, he hadn't been hit hard. They were, you know, bunting the ball in the infield and hitting little backspin pop flies. Why would you take him out of the game there? And it looks like the game may have gotten away from the Rangers because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we'll see what happens. Well, Mike, we have you here to talk about the Philly pro sports scene, so let's get right to that. Now, even with Sunday's win, the Eagles are 2-3. The Phillies, of course, were the worst team in Major League Baseball this year. The Flyers missed the playoffs last year and brought in a new coach. The Sixers are in that never-ending rebuilding plan. Please tell us better days are ahead in Philly.
Well, I wish I could guarantee that.
Please.
I do think that finally, for the time being anyway, these teams are, generally speaking, headed in the right direction. I think the Phillies were lagging, were the ones lagging in that regard, right up until the moment they made the Hamels trade. And then to get those five prospects for him, you know, they have the opportunity now to replenish their system, to get some young players up here, to really start fresh. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be terrible next year or probably even the year after that, but it does mean that they've finally begun a process that they should have begun at least 2 years ago. As far as the Flyers, they're probably going to be lousy this year. I mean, they play the Blackhawks tonight, and, you know, they may very well get their doors blown off by the defending Stanley Cup champions. But again, same sort of thing. They've begun a process that they should have begun a couple years ago in terms of trying to get out from under these onerous contracts they have under the salary cap, you know, collecting young talent, collecting young defensemen, trying to build for the future. They never do that. It's kind of this, they've been on this orange and black hamster wheel for 40 years, always trying to win another Stanley Cup and never getting there. You know, the one team you might feel least good about to me is the Eagles, because if this doesn't work with Chip and the moves that he's made, where do they go from there? You know, do you just wipe the chalkboard clean and start all over again next offseason? You know, they really went for it now in a way, and maybe it's easier in the NFL to do that, but, you know, they'd be the ones that I'm a little worried about. If this doesn't work, then what? What do you do then if you're Chip?
Well, we're going to talk lots of Eagles in just a minute, but since we were talking about the whole scene, the one team we want to talk about also is the 76ers. We have another one of your pals on next week, Tom Moore from Calkins Media, and we're going to do a little Sixers preview for the season. But, you know, you've been watching what's developing with Sam Hinkie and company. Are they finally going to start making a little progress this year in terms of wins and, you know, get up to the maybe 25-win area?
I'd like to think they're going to, yeah. I can't imagine they're going to be as bad as they've been the last 2 years. And, you know, Okafor is banged up now, it looks like, and Nick Stauskas hasn't played because of an ankle. You know, if you ask Sam Hinkie, he'll tell you, you know, the difference between winning 25 games this year and 18 like we did last year is negligible. You know, and, yeah, I think everybody wants them to be a little bit better to show some tangible signs of progress. But remember, the big issue coming out of this season and really next year in June when the draft rolls around is the possibility of four number one picks that the Sixers could have next year. You know, they still have rights to the LA Lakers pick if the Lakers don't finish in the top three in the draft, if the Lakers finish fourth or anywhere worse than that, better than that, I should say, however you want to look at it, the Sixers will get that pick. So you're very well going to have two lottery picks this year, and that's part of the growth and the rebuilding too. I think at this point, the big question for them is, you know, what is Brett Brown's staying power? You know, everybody seems to agree that he's a very good coach. The question is how patient he is. And, you know, to go through another year like the ones that he's gone through his first 2 years here, where it's, you know, teaching, it's having to put up with some really bad basketball because you're trying to find, you know, a diamond in the bottom of a Cracker Jack box, you know, that's a tough ask. And, you know, he's the one I really kind of keep my eye on when it comes to the Sixers. Hinkie is fully invested in this project. The ownership is fully behind him. The question is whether Brown is going to have the staying power and the patience to stay along for the ride.
Yep.
Hey, Mike, switching back over, you talked about the Phillies and the Hamels trade and getting them back on the right track. How do you see things working out for the $25 million elephant in the room? are they going to, you know, reports are he will be back, has to be back, or did they just have to cut bait?
If I were them, I would cut bait at this point, because whatever you're going to get out of him, and we're talking about Ryan Howard, obviously, whatever you're going to get out of him, I think at this point is outweighed, and this is nothing against Ryan, but the specter of him being here. He's just, you know, he is an elephant in the room. He's the thing that, like, oh, here's Ryan Howard, $25 million, can't get rid of him, remember that contract? Oh, man. And it's just this last little tether to the previous era that they really just ought to cut. They just say, look, Ryan, we love you. You've been the greatest slugger we've had since Mike Schmidt, but it's time. And here's your money. Fare thee well. And we wish you all the best. I mean, that's the thing, is that you've got this generation now, this recent generation of Phillies fans, who either forget or never knew the hitter that he was in 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, when he was, you know, the premier run producer in the National League East, and a big reason why this team won those five straight division championships. He made everybody in that lineup better because pitchers feared him. Nobody fears him now. And it's
absolutely
a sad thing to see in a lot of ways. So, you know, if they really want to commence with this new era and this rebuilding, I think it would be good for everybody, just kind of like a fresh breath of fresh air. Just let them go. If you can latch on with another team, that's great. If you can trade them for something, God bless you. I don't think you can. But at this point, it's just better for everybody if they start fresh, I think.
Yep, I agree. Well, Mike, speaking of rebuilding, Chip Kelly decided to rebuild his 10-6 team from last year by cleaning house, getting rid of, you know, letting Jeremy Maclin go, trading his quarterback for Sam Bradford, bringing in some other new faces. Now, we saw some great stuff in the preseason, fooled a lot of us, including me, who thought they might be, you know, Super Bowl contenders. Here they are, though, 2-3. I guess the good news is they did make some adjustments this past week, ran more snaps under center, a little less hurry to the hurry-up offense, and got a nice, much-needed win over the Saints. What's your take on this season and where things are headed with the Eagles?
Well, I think Chip did some, as you said, made some necessary adjustments, the primary one of which was slowing the offense down to a large extent. You know, Dave Murphy from the Daily News made an excellent point in a column last week where he said, you know, if you're going to make all these changes on offense and you're going to have particularly offensive linemen, guys who were backups last year who are now playing full-time this year, the idea of expecting them to run an offense at breakneck speed just doesn't make sense. You know, you hear coaches and athletes talk about this all the time. You want to slow the game down for people. Well, you know, Chip wasn't having any of that. They weren't slowing the game down for anybody. It was high time for them to do that. They also went with some two tight end sets that allowed for better blocking, that, you know, allowed for Ertz and Brent Celek to be on the field at the same time, which I think is a good thing. I think that's helpful to the passing game in Sam Bradford, particularly because the wide receivers are not productive at this point outside of Jordan Matthews, and he's not even as productive as he could be. I mean, I love the kid, but we got to find him a pair of opposable thumbs because he's dropping the ball so many times.
Yep.
You know, it's not helpful. But, you know, I think moving forward, now Chip has to, I hope, if you're the Eagles, the hope has to be that Chip has taken a step back and said, okay, I've been stubborn for 5 weeks. What I wanted to do with this group wasn't working. And so now I've made my adjustments, and now this is just going to be a week-to-week thing where, you know, it's not about playing a certain way, the same way every single week. It might be we got to adjust for this opponent, we got to adjust this way for that opponent, and above all else, the zone read is gone. The hurry up playing with this breakneck tempo is probably gone until these guys all get comfortable with the offense. So we'll see. I don't think this is a case where they've figured everything out just because they played a team that wasn't very good and has a really lousy defense and a really overrated defensive coordinator in Rob Ryan. I think this was, okay, they beat a team that they're better than, you know, and they were better prepared to be the team they were better than they were the previous week when they played the Redskins and, you know, than they were when they played the Cowboys in week two. So we'll see what they do with the Giants.
Well, you know, Mike, you made an interesting point, and it was something I was actually going to run by you at some point. It seems to me that, you know, the Eagles, when Chip first got here, what they were looking at is they were coming out and making the defenses adjust to them. And to your point, I don't think they're doing that anymore. And I think this week against the Saints, they felt like they could do some things differently, so they came out in a little bit of more up-tempo than they had in the other games. And then they get in the games, NFC East games, against Dallas and Washington, and they want to line up and try to play smash mouth at a little slower pace. And that makes them just like every other football team, and I'm not sure they're as talented offensively as those other teams.
Yeah, you know, I think It's hard to say. I mean, I think that Chip went into this with part of the reason that they were running over teams early on in his tenure, you know, that opening night game against the Redskins, the 7-touchdown performance that Nick Foles had against the Raiders, some games last year, was that teams were still figuring out what Chip likes to do because every coach has tendencies. And what they figured out eventually was that the Eagles' offense, while it's complex in its execution, so to speak, and the way they kind of dress it up, it's really pretty simple in what they're actually doing. They just try to disguise what they're doing through tempo and you know, exotic formations and things like that. And once you figure out the tells, then it becomes relatively easy to defend. And that's what was happening, I think, in the first few weeks of the season. Teams had figured out Chip's tells. They said, okay, if DeMarco Murray lines up to the left of Sam Bradford, the likelihood is that they're going to hand the ball to Murray and he's going to run right, you know, because that's what they tend to do. And all the machinations of tempo and hurrying up and you know, Brent Celek lines up here and Miles Austin lines up there, it doesn't matter. As long as DeMarco Murray's next to Sam Bradford, we know where the ball's going. So I think Chip got out of that a little bit this past week. You saw Bradford under center more often. You saw him throwing the ball after he was under center. And I think those are all good things. And Chip kind of needed to hit, refresh, I think, on some of his ideas and his schemes so that he gains a little bit of that mystery and that advantage back.
Hey, Mike, you wrote a column last week, speaking of DeMarco Murray, that Ryan Matthews is probably a better fit than Murray and should be the go-to running back. Explain.
Well, I think to the naked eye, you don't have to be Bill Belichick or Vince Lombardi to see this. You know, Matthews is a more powerful runner than Murray. He hits the hole a little bit quicker. He's stronger, more powerful, lowers his head in a way that Murray seems not to do. Murray seems a little bit more patient. And I think that, you know, for all the hullabaloo about how poorly the offensive line played, and it did play poorly, Matthews did not run the ball poorly through the first 4 weeks of the season behind that offensive line. He had a big game against the Jets. He had carried the ball 5 times for 20 yards against the Redskins. That's not bad production, you know, even though it's a small sample size. And then you saw him, what he did against the Saints. He carried the ball 8 times for 73 yards. I mean, that's a really good yards per carry average. And I think that, you know, they tried so hard to get Murray involved and did that again on Sunday. They gave him 20 carries. But in a pinch, you know, when push comes to shove, I really think Matthews is the better fit for this system. I mean, if you got third and one and you need to get a yard, I think Chip, if you shot him up with sodium pentothal, would say, I'm giving the ball to Ryan Matthews. And taking my chances. It's not going to be to DeMarco Murray on some kind of zone read. It's going to be, here's Ryan Matthews coming at you, and deal with him. So I'm really curious to see how this plays out moving forward. It's nice that they got Murray going a little bit, but, you know, they also paid him $40 million over 5 years, and they may end up paying him that. Matthews doesn't make that kind of money. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting balance there. You know, does Murray see the ball just because of the money he's making? Or, you know, do we reach the point where if this keeps up, Matthews becomes the better option, which I think he already is.
Hey, Mike, we've asked every guest that we've had over, well, since the season pretty much started in the first week torching of Byron Maxwell by Julio Jones, we've asked everybody else pretty much the same question. What's your take on Byron Maxwell at this point? And, you know, we know we paid him an awful lot of money and probably overpaid him, but can he be anything of a lockdown corner we're hoping for?
He's been better the last few weeks. I think everybody should acknowledge that. And I think the question becomes, what is Bill Davis going to do to alleviate responsibility/pressure on the entire secondary? Secondary has been very good, with the exception of Maxwell's games early on against Jones, who's probably the best receiver in the NFL, and then the following week against Terrence Williams, where he gave up a long touchdown. Maxwell's been okay the last couple of weeks, and, you know, part of the reason he's been okay is because Malcolm Jenkins and Walter Thurman at safety have been terrific. They've been really, really good. And now last week you had a situation where the Saints were missing two starters along the offensive line. Fletcher Cox gets three sacks. The Eagles apply pressure on Drew Brees all day. That certainly makes things easier in a secondary. So is Maxwell going to be worth $63 million that the Eagles paid him? I'm not sure about that. You know, he was a zone, a cover three corner in Seattle. He didn't play, a lot of, press coverage man-to-man. So there's going to be an adjustment for him. And, Billy Davis, I think, has struggled over his tenure here in making those kinds of adjustments, figuring out, okay, what are a player's strengths and how do I maximize them? It would also help quite a bit if the Eagles could get some production out of an outside linebacker other than Connor Barwin. I mean, they're getting nothing from Brandon Graham.
Right.
Marcus Smith was actually on the field for a few plays last game and pressured Brees at one point, which was nice to see. But, he was a first-round pick in 2014. We're talking about one quarterback hurry like he's the second coming of Lawrence Taylor or something. That's not a good sign.
Key game Monday night, the Giants and Eagles. We'll see how that goes. And we're going to put you in the 10-5 hot seat in just a minute or two, Mike. But first, I want to ask you one or two things briefly about sports journalism. And full disclosure, by the way, you and I were both employed by the Wall Street Journal between 2010 and 2013. You as a great sports reporter, me as a lowly business news radio anchor, although we didn't know each other, actually. Now, what I want to ask is, when a city's teams, like in Philadelphia, aren't doing so well, does that actually make it easier for a columnist to choose topics to write about?
It's interesting you ask that, because I was discussing this the other day with one of my colleagues. In some ways, it makes it easier because you can bang the same drum all the time. When the Eagles, seriously, when the Eagles are not playing well, you really don't write anything other than why aren't they playing well, or this is why they're not playing well, because relatively speaking, it casts such a pall over the city, and we could get into the differences between Philadelphia and New York in this regard, and certainly, writing for the Philadelphia Inquirer versus writing about sports for the Wall Street Journal. But, when a team is going really well, like, for instance, the Eagles were in 2004, then you get a situation where you can do some more offbeat stuff, you can do some different kinds of things, you can think outside the box a little bit more. You can even do that with, let's say, the Phillies to a certain extent in a season like the one they just had, which is so long, and they're going to be bad from the jump. And so, dissecting why they're bad gets really tiresome after a while. It doesn't carry the same urgency as trying to figure out why Chip Kelly's offense doesn't work anymore. So in some ways it's easier when a team is losing because it's just, hey, with respect to the Eagles, it's just, why are they losing? What's going on here? Why, let's all be outraged. In some other situations, it's easier if the team is actually doing well.
By the way, we could have a whole discussion about Twitter, but I want to mention you are a frequent tweeter, and I like the fact that you seem to use quite a bit of humor and sarcasm on Twitter. And let me give you three recent examples. This is things that you put out there. So I wrote a column about football being dangerous, and Miles Austin said some stuff in it. Another one, hashtag Flyers have players with jersey numbers 82, 89, and 93. They're all reporting as eligible. And my personal favorite, little known fact, Chase Utley shot the sheriff and the deputy, then slid hard into their corpses.
To be quite honest, guys, it's called Twitter. And if you're going to call something Twitter, you better darn well be silly on it.
I agree.
That's kind of how I look at it. It's funny, in my Twitter bio, I've had this for a while, that I provide links and bad jokes. And that's pretty much it. I use Twitter kind of as my wire service. I wake up in the morning. I should say my 15-month-old son wakes me up in the morning, and I bring him downstairs, and I get my coffee, and I get him his bottle, and I'm looking at Twitter because it's my wire service. It's my news, in the morning. But when I'm tweeting, if I'm not sending out a link to a column or a story that I've done, it's just, hey, random funny things sort of thing. And I don't think it needs to be taken that seriously because, reality, how serious can you be over 140 characters?
I love it.
On something called Twitter.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, if it were, gravenews.com, that would be one thing, but it's not. It's Twitter. So,
right. Well, hey, Mike, as Chip Chet mentioned just a minute ago, we do a segment called 10 and 5 with our special guests, and basically it's a little hot seat where Chet asks you 10 questions. You have about 5 minutes to answer them, and you up for that?
Bring it on.
Here we go. All right, keep your answers brief, and we'll get all these in without a problem. Mike Sielski, we talked about it earlier, but how will the Eagles end up doing this season?
They will finish 9-7 and win the NFC East.
I like the way you think. Now, which Eagle has been the most pleasant surprise this year, and who's been the biggest disappointment?
Most pleasant surprise is an odd one, in that Fletcher Cox, I think, has taken a step forward. He was terrific last year, but has been better this year. So if it were possible to play better than he did last year, he's doing it, which is a pleasant surprise. Biggest disappointment, in some ways, Chip Kelly, that he didn't figure out sooner what he had and how to get the most out of it.
Mm. Eagles-Giants Monday night, what's your prediction?
24-7 Eagles.
Oh, wow. I hope you're right there. Let's switch to baseball,
no,
number four. Okay. His time in Philly is likely over. Why was Dominic Brown such a bust?
Because it's really hard to be an elite major league player. It's even harder when you have a rather large sense of entitlement and sense of disproportion with respect to what you've accomplished and what you need to maintain a little bit of success that you've accomplished.
Growing up in the 80s, Mike, who were your favorite Philadelphia pro athletes, any sport to watch and root for?
Oh, wow, really good question. I caught the tail end of Mike Schmidt's career with the Phillies. I loved him. I was a big Flyers fan and probably in the early 90s when they got Rod Brindamore, I really liked him a lot when I was in high school. And as far as the Eagles, well, that's a good question. I wasn't a huge Randall Cunningham guy. I kind of liked when I was in college, they had Ty Detmer. And I remember he had a really good streak there in the 96 season for a while. I thought, everybody got excited about the Eagles. And then Ty Detmer turned back into Ty Detmer again. So there you go.
Hey, since you chose it as a profession, did you have any sports writer heroes?
I did. Bill Lyon, who was the longtime sports columnist at the Inquirer. As a kid, I loved his writing. He actually became my mentor. I contacted him when I was in college, and he took me under his wing. And we've known each other 20 years, and he's a great, great man.
Now, you're a LaSalle alum, Mike. I know Tom Gull and Kenny Durrett are a little before your time. So who's the best athlete to come out of LaSalle since 1980?
Oh, that's a really good question. The best athlete to come out of LaSalle since 1980. Well, we had an Olympic swimmer named Frank Leskis, who actually swam for Albania. there have been a number of track athletes who have done very, very well at the national level. And as far as basketball players go, since 1980, Lionel Simmons.
Yep. If you said anybody besides Lionel Simmons, I was going to have to hit you in the head or something. I mean, they had Michael Brooks, Rasul Butler, Doug Overton, Tim Legler, but Lionel
Simmons. Yeah, the L-Train, boy, those were some great years. They really were.
Absolutely. Speaking of hoops, how will the Sixers, Twin Towers, Jahlil Okafor, and Nerlens Noel do this year? And what is the longer-term outlook for Brett Brown's squad?
They'll do okay. I think they're both young, developing players. I like what Noel did in the second half last season, particularly on defense. I think their skills complement each other relatively well. And I think the team overall will probably win between 20 to 26 games or so.
All right. Now, your pal and former colleague from your Bucks County Courier Times days, Kevin Cooney, told us some stuff about you last week, like how he once blasted a World Cup soccer game in your hotel room at 4 a.m. Anything we need to know about Kevin for future reference?
Yes. Kevin's about to get married. He's about to get engaged. But we, in the newsroom one night, we played a joke on him where we pretended to take a phone message for him, and we scribbled it down scribbled the number down on a piece of paper, and it was a woman who was looking to talk to him, and the number we put down was 215-867-5309, and he ended up calling the number, not realizing
it
was the Jenny Tommy Two Tone song.
Yeah. Yes. And by the way, I like your comment about Kevin's five-part video series on the Phillies' off-season plans. Five parts? What is this, rich man, poor man?
It's nuts. Five parts? People are my best friends in the world, and I can't watch all five parts of that thing. Holy cow.
And finally, Mike, speaking of Cooney, he thinks the Philly pro team that'll most likely be next to win a championship is the Flyers, with the Phillies second most likely. What's your best guess?
You know, I'm going to go off the beaten track a little bit here. I think the importance of one player in the NBA makes so much of a difference that I'm willing to say that the Sixers are going to be the next team to win a championship. I don't think it has to be a long rebuild if the ping pong balls bounce right for them. So I know that sounds crazy, but that's where I'm going.
Well, I love basketball, and I hope you're right on that front. Mike, terrific job playing 10-5.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right, Mike. Well, hey, I have one more question if we can fit in, because I think we've used up your time. But if you have time for one more question, I'd like to ask you about Chase Utley right quick.
Sure.
And what your take was on all that whining coming out of New York from those fans and the media up there. Do you think dirty play or fair play?
Based on your use of that word, you're not going to like my take. It was a dirty play. it was. You know, it's funny that there's been kind of this humorous meme online, you know, on Twitter and Facebook about sweeping the leg, the idea that, you know, the takeoff on the Karate Kid, you know, the idea that Utley went in there after Tejada deliberately to take his leg out. And I don't think he did that. But, you know, he dove spikes up first at the lower part of Tejada's leg. It literally looks like a scene in the Karate Kid movie where the bad guy, Johnny Lawrence, jump kicks Daniel LaRusso right in the same spot. And so, look, Utley plays hard. I get that. He didn't have to do that. He did not. He didn't slide at the base. He didn't make an attempt to touch the base. I know what playing good, hard baseball is. That was not it. That was, I'm going to take this guy out no matter the cost. And it was an illegal play, and it was a dirty play. He could have slid earlier and achieved the same thing, and he didn't. So, you know, do I think it's the New York media turning him into the second coming of David Berkowitz is appropriate? No, it's not. But that doesn't make it a clean baseball play. It wasn't.
I somewhat agree with you in that. Just I think it was a very, very late slide as well.
Really late.
Yeah, to me it wasn't a slide. It was he jumped at Tejada's lower legs. It wasn't a slide, and I just don't know any other way around it. I mean, I feel like I know the difference between good hard baseball and what Chase Utley did. And to me, what Utley did went, you know, it crossed the line.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. All right,
thanks,
Mike. Well,
guys,
hey, we
really
appreciate you joining us and taking the time out of your schedule, and we appreciate your insight and your columns. You do a great job, and we enjoy reading, and thanks for joining us, and hope we can do it again.
Anytime, guys. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Okay, Mike. Thanks.
Take care.
All right. Hey, Chet, let's get on with our trivia question right quick, and the first correct answer wins an autographed 8x10 color photo of the Eagles' former Pro Bowler Trent Cole, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. Okay, our question for this week. This one should be easy too, Chet, don't you think?
I think
this
so.
This four-time Eagles Pro Bowler holds the team record for touchdowns scored in a career with 79. Can you name him? This four-time Eagles Pro Bowler holds the team's record for touchdowns scored in a career with 79. Can you name him? Again, our shopforkisses.org phone number to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. So let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484 319-8043. Well, Chet, Mike had some interesting comments. Anything stick out that somewhat surprised you?
Yeah, that he was a Ty Detmer fan for a few weeks.
Yes, that was interesting. That was interesting. The one that I don't know if surprise is the right word, but his take on cutting bait with Ryan Howard. You know, I think as fans, I think we think it's probably time. I just wasn't really sure that he was going to go there, but I wholeheartedly agree with him that the you know, there's a whole stream of fans that don't appreciate what Ryan Howard did for those 5 or 6 years that led to the World Series, and don't think Ryan Howard is what Ryan Howard really has been.
Yeah, I think he was right on point with the whole Ryan Howard discussion. I mean, the fact that he did give us, you know, 5 or 6 tremendous years, and the fact that it is time to cut bait with Ryan Howard. You got rid of everybody else. You've moved on. It's time to make the move at first base, too. Let Darren Ruff be the guy next year, or one of the guys from Reading or Lehigh Valley. You're not going to win anything. You're not going to compete next year. Why have Howard there?
Yeah, I just can't imagine what $25 million must taste like while you're eating it.
Yeah, well, that's not our problem, though.
I hear you. Hey, let's talk some Flyers. They opened the season in front of a loud and excited crowd in Tampa last week. They played pretty well, came out of it with a point. They get down to Miami and just get shellacked by the Panthers 7-1, and they already had to call for a team meeting after 2 games. That's pretty unusual. But then they bounce back with a nice 1-0 win against those same Panthers, and as Mike was mentioning, the defending champion Blackhawks are in the house, and we'll be honoring one of your all-time favorite Flyers, Kimmo Tiininen, tonight. Can this team avoid the slow start, do you think, that they've had the last few years and not have to work from behind all year like they have?
Well, the good news, Bill, is they've played 3 games, and unlike the past 3 seasons, they've managed a win as well as an overtime loss, so that's good for 3 points total. Yeah, they've been known in recent years to get off to a bad start. They haven't won a game over their first 3 for the last 3 years. Now, the bad news is they are so far really struggling offensively, just 4 goals in 3 games and only 2 even-strength goals. This team may have to win a lot of 2-1 games if they're going to have a successful season, and I don't know if they're strong enough in goal to do that. By the way, kudos to the new backup goalie, Michael Neuwirth, who merely pitched a shutout in his first start as a Flyer Monday night. And, yeah, nice to see them honoring Kimmo tonight, a great guy, a great Flyer, and a guy who was fortunate enough to win a Stanley Cup in his final NHL game. Kimmo Tiininen certainly will be missed in the NHL.
Absolutely. And to your point on Neuwirth, he's also getting the call tonight. He's going to be in the goal tonight. So that'll be interesting to see how he fares against the Blackhawks. And I'm with you. It's about time the offense gets going and make something happen here, or it could be a long season. I do like the fact that they've added some new blood back there on that blue line, though. They're going to be better back there, I think.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, last week I said I was a little concerned about Mason, whether he's the stud in goal that you need to compete in the NHL. And then he goes out and gets shelled on Saturday night. Now, we don't know what this issue is. He's got a personal family issue that he is dealing with, which is why he didn't show up for the game on Monday night. You know, he gave them notice, and I guess why he's not there this evening. Hopefully it's nothing too terribly serious and then everything will work out. But I'm just not sure that he's the guy that's going to carry you into a deep playoff run. So, you know, we'll see what Michael Neuwirth has to offer. He certainly looked good in his first start.
He did. And, you know, it's also going to be interesting to see how Dave Hakstol develops this defense a little bit. He's, you know, he's going to play Gudas again today, and Luke Shen looks like he may be the odd man out a little bit in this deal. And, you know, Shen, I think people lose sight of the fact he's only 25 years old himself. But he seems to be a little bit of the odd man out in this group. And as we mentioned last week, some of the young kids down at with the Phantoms, they look like they're ready to come. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And we always talk about the attrition of the NFL season. There's certainly great attrition in an NHL season as well.
Oh, yeah. It's a long season, though, so there's a lot that can happen over the next several months. We will see what happens. Bill, I just want to – just something crossed my mind. Penn State is visiting those number one Ohio State Buckeyes this Saturday night. Should I even bother to watch that game?
Absolutely. Absolutely. for one thing, I think Penn State is playing a little bit better. I don't know if they're playing good enough, but they play solid defense. And they always have. It's a question of can they do anything offensively. But maybe more important is maybe those Buckeyes just aren't quite as good as everyone leads them up to be. And, you know, they're still ranked number one. They've snuck by several games. They barely beat an Indiana team that Penn State took to the woodshed. So, yeah, why not? Protect the quarterback and the kid can do some pretty good things.
Yeah, there's always hope. You're right. And the defense has looked good. And I agree that Ohio State is not the powerhouse that they were last year. So hopefully that'll at least keep it close. And, you know, we'll see. I will watch.
Well, let me throw one back at you. And let's talk about the Temple Owls right quick. The undefeated Temple Owls,
undefeated.
I might add, and who already have a sellout set up for the Notre Dame game here in several weeks. They've got UCF coming in this week with who is winless. There is a real good chance that when this Notre Dame game comes along, the Owls could be undefeated going into that game in a sold-out Lincoln Financial Field. What a fantastic event that will be for Temple football and for the city of Philadelphia.
Well, let me tell you, I was there 5 years ago when Penn State and Temple played, and it was about 70% Penn State, and it was still only about two-thirds full. Then I was there this year for the opening game, and it was darn close to a full house, not exactly a sellout, but pretty close. And this time it was probably 65% Temple. And, you know, there was certainly a difference and some rabid fans. And I have a lot of friends who are Temple alums. So while I was disappointed that Temple beat Penn State that opening week, I'm really happy to see them having the success they're having. I like their coach. I do hope they win the next couple of games. And I'll tell you, I would love to see them upset Notre Dame on Halloween at a sold-out Lincoln Financial Field.
Oh, you and me both. You and me both. And I'll tell you something, you know, in the Furman list of things to do, a couple weeks after that Notre Dame game, the Owls come down to Tampa to play University of South Florida over at Raymond James Stadium. And there's a very good possibility that the Furmans will be somewhere close to the sidelines for that game, since my son used to coach with the Owls some years ago, and that's our goal. We're going to try to hit the sidelines on November 14th at Raymond James Stadium, and hopefully we'll be looking at still an undefeated Owls team.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. I mean, they'll be in the top 25 certainly by then, assuming they keep winning. They may get a pretty decent bowl game this year, so I wish them all the success.
Absolutely, me too. Well, hey, we have a caller here. Maybe we have a trivia answer, or maybe we have somebody who just wants to talk Philly sports. Here we go. Hello, welcome to the show. Who do we have?
Hey, how you fellas doing? This is Danny.
Hey, Danny.
Oh, surprise, it's Danny.
Danny's looking for another prize.
What's that?
You looking for another prize, Danny?
Well, you're going to have to tell me the question because I've unfortunately been busy.
Okay.
And I haven't been able to listen to the show tonight yet until I just called you on the phone. So I did catch some of your conversation about college football and and stuff. And I wouldn't look past those Buckeyes. They haven't been playing well, but old Urban Meyer, he's a good coach. He's going to take them to the end again, I think.
Well, Bill, give him the question. See how he does with the trivia question.
Number one in the nation, that's for sure. Well, hey, here's your question, Danny, and take a stab at it right quick, okay? This four-time Eagles Pro Bowler.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What's that?
I'm sorry.
This four-time Eagles Pro Bowler holds the team's record for touchdowns scored in a career with 79. Can you name him?
I thought you were going to give a question about Trent Colton. This is a picture of him.
Nope.
No. No.
Four-time Pro Bowler who has, say it again, who has most touchdowns.
Holds the team's record for touchdowns scored in a career with 79.
Um, Yeah, I do know who that is. That's Harold Carmichael, I think.
He is good.
That is Harold Carmichael. I was going to give you a hint.
Yeah.
It is Harold Carmichael. From 1972 to 1983, Harold scored 79 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So, Dan, you are the winner. You are the winner of the Trent Cole 8x10, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles.
I'm glad you didn't ask how many touchdowns. I knew he held the record, but I didn't know how many touchdowns.
Well, that would have actually been pretty hard to know that.
Yeah.
All right, Danny. Any real quick thoughts on the Eagles Giants coming up this week?
Well, I think we need to double team Odell Beckham. if we can keep him in check, I mean, he's going to get his, but if we can keep him in check, I think we have a chance to win that game too. I mean, it's a Monday night game. I mean, it's going to be a huge one. I got to give kudos to Mark Echo. He called this game. He said they were going to be playing for first place, and they are. And he said
they
that
are.
2 weeks ago already. Yeah. So,
well, we'll
go
see.
Eagles.
I
have the faith, just like I did last week.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a good game.
Me and Captain Kool-Aid, we had the faith, yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, Danny. Well, hey, we'll get Carl to send that picture out to you, and we appreciate you listening and appreciate you calling.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you, Carl Henderson. You're the best, man.
All right.
Take care, Danny.
Thanks, Danny.
All right.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Chet. I wanted to touch base back with you on this, on the Cole Hamels taking the hill tonight. And, there's a lot
over.
Of Philly fans. Is it over now?
Yeah, it's 6-3 final. The Blue Jays win, so Hamels takes the loss. Rangers are going home.
Wow. Well, you know, I wanted to say to you, I don't know this to be – I think this is pretty close to an absolute fact, that everybody that the Phillies traded at the deadline – all made the playoffs except for your friend, Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what a shame that he didn't make it. But, we see Cole Hamels and Ben Revere squaring off against each other in this game. You got Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins, of course, out in L.A. So they've all done pretty well.
They have done well. And I have to ask you, game five coming up, tomorrow between the Dodgers and the Mets, who are you rooting for?
Oh, I'm definitely rooting for the Dodgers. As a Phillies fan, I can't root for the Mets. No way. It's in L.A. You got Zach Greinke on the mound. And, of course, I still have some fondness for Rollins and Utley. So I'm going Dodger blue all the way tomorrow night.
I am, too. I couldn't root for the Mets probably if they were the only team playing. So I'm going Dodgers, and you'll probably hear that again from me before the end of this show regarding a New York team. But we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Well, let me ask you, if the Dodgers and Cubs square off, who would you root for if the Dodgers and Cubs met in the NLCS?
Well, I've never been a big Dodgers fan. I'm probably going to root for Utley and Rollins if they get to play much. I'm not in on the sympathy feeling for the Cubs. So I really don't know. I don't know that I will really have a rooting interest in that series other than I will watch it because I think it'll be good baseball. Kershaw and Greinke
are great.
Cubs have great pitching as well. I think it'll be fun to watch.
I don't know who I'll root for, but I do feel a little empathy for the Cubs. You know, they've waited so long for a World Series, so there is that. I would kind of like to see them, but I do like the Dodgers too. So I don't know. I have to think about that one, if it happens even.
Yeah. Well, you're a little more sensitive kind of guy than me.
I am a sensitive guy.
hey, this week's winner, the Philly Press Box Radio Pick'em Pool chat, was Bill Hovis. Bill wasn't able to join us tonight due to travel things for work he's got going on. He's actually on an airplane. But it seems every week it goes down to the tiebreaker, and it did again this week. Bill beat Tom Vibbert, although both have nice 11-3 records, and six others finished just a game behind at 10-4. I believe there was a five-way tie actually going into Monday night, five- or six-way tie. So good competition each week, and we've had a new winner or different winner each week as well. And for the season, Billy Furman is still leading. He picked up another game, so he's 2 games over Carl Henderson, 3 games over Danny Bevins, and 7 players are tied, just 4 games back, one of which is you, Mr. Chesko.
Hey, by the way, I lost 3 games in heartbreaking fashion this past week. I had picked the Titans over the Bills, lost that one by a point, and I had the Chargers winning in the Monday night game, and then, of course, the Steelers win in the last second, so I could have had a much better week than I did, and yeah, I'm still in the hunt, so I'm not giving up.
Absolutely. Well, it's a long season. There's no bye weeks for the pickers, so there's plenty of time left to play, and it's not going to take much when you're only talking about 1, 2, 3, or 4 games, 5 games separating people. Things are certainly going to change. I can sure vouch for how easy it is to have a bad week because I have them pretty often.
Yes, you do.
So, hey, let's update our upcoming signings list of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And as you know, Chet, Carl held his Customer Appreciation Day last Saturday. Gary Dornhofer, Larry Goodenough, and former Philadelphia A's and Phillies pitcher Bobby Shantz. And Carl tells me they had some great old-time stories being thrown around. And he actually sent me a little video clip, Chet, that was really cool, where Bobby Shantz was personalizing photos about facing Jackie Robinson.
Oh,
back
wow.
In the day. Yeah, really, some really cool stuff. He sent me a little video clip of it. It was really neat. But it was a fun day by all and a great turnout by Carl giving back to his fans and customers that come out all the time. Of course, one of my favorite Phillies from the old days, we talked about this, Yes We Can, Dave Cash, will be in the store on October 17th. And a couple more Broad Street Bullies and Stanley Cup champions, Rick McLeish and Bob the Hound Kelly, in the store October 24th. You can get more information on the website at carlscards.com, on Twitter at carlscards, or by calling the store 610-789-4996. Well, Chet, it is that time again to make our Eagles Fearless Predictions of the Week. And even though you were up first last week, you're up first again this week.
Well, now you remember on the show last week I picked the Saints, but then I did clearly switch my pick on Saturday, and I mentioned on Facebook on Sunday that I was going with the Eagles, and they did come through with a nice 3-touchdown win. So I'm hoping now that the Eagles' big win over the Saints will help get them started on the road back. They'll be at home with a national television audience watching Monday night. Yeah, first place is at stake, believe it or not. If they win, they're 3-3. The Giants would fall to 3-3. The Redskins are probably going to lose Sunday, and they'll be 2-4, so I'm not worried about them. And since Chip now seems like he's willing to make some adjustments, you know, have Bradford take more snaps under center, which the running backs like, I am going to pick the Eagles again. I haven't narrowed down the score, but I'm picking the Eagles by a touchdown over the Giants Monday night.
Well, I certainly didn't fare very well on my prediction last week, thank God. I was glad I was dead wrong. I had the Saints winning that thing in a blowout. The Saints surprised me that they were as bad as they are. And for the Eagles, they took advantage of that bad, which that's a good thing. So I'm good with that. As I mentioned, I wouldn't pick a New York team unless they were playing a Dallas team. So I am going to take the Eagles as well, but I'm going to go with something a little bit closer here. I'm thinking maybe 24-20 Eagles.
I'll take it.
24-20 Eagles. But I'm going to tell you something, Chet. I'm going to tell you that you watch the first series of offensive football for the Eagles, and you will know the outcome of the game after the first series that the Eagles have the football. If they come out in that slow, methodical approach that we were just talking about with Mike, that they did against Dallas and Washington, they will lose. If they come out a little more up-tempo, like they did against the Jets and like they did against New Orleans, and control the game and not go with 18 minutes of offense in the game, they'll win the game.
one of the most impressive things for me this past week was the fact that, you know, Bradford threw those two red zone interceptions in the end zone and still came back from that, didn't lose his confidence, ended up having a pretty good game after that. I mean, 32 out of 45, and that included a couple or three drops yet again by the receivers. So not a bad game at all offensively. I mean, they put 39 points on the board, so obviously pretty good. I know the Saints aren't that good, but it made me feel a lot better about this offense. And, yeah, the adjustments that Chip made and the slowing down the pace a little bit, I like the changes that were made. I like the direction that he's taking.
Well, I do too. I just hope it wasn't because the Saints were just that bad. But the Eagles' offensive line played extremely well, I thought, most of the time. The only, if I had one negative to point out about that game that I haven't even really heard talked about all week, and I don't know the right number, but I think it was pretty substantial, was how many runs were zero or negative yard runs. And I would say it was still probably somewhere six or eight or somewhere significant amount.
So not as bad as in a couple of the earlier games, though.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Absolutely. But, you know, you still can't have negative plays, too many negative plays to put you behind the chains, you know. And they were easy to handle this week against the Saints, but they may not be quite so easy to handle against a better defense, which I don't know that's the Giants, really, but as the season progresses. The interesting thing, too, to me about this game will be, statistically at least, neither team runs the football very well, and both of them play the run pretty well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I can't wait for Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football. The only thing bad about Monday Night Football is Sunday afternoon, Chet. It becomes
the
honeydew day.
Yep, exactly.
All right, Mr. Chesko, any parting shots for the week as we're getting close to the top of the hour?
Well, my parting shot this week is about patience and not jumping to conclusions. The Eagles looked so darn good in winning three preseason games. A lot of us, me included, figured right away they were an 11 or 12 win team and a bona fide Super Bowl contender. The regular season begins with two losses, and a lot of folks were quick to call for Chip Kelly's head, ready to run Sam Bradford and Byron Maxwell out of town. Well, now they're 2-3, and some folks are back on the bandwagon, while others say, yeah, who'd they beat? So they're still skeptical. They still expect the worst. Maybe for once we should just wait it out, not rush to judgment. As Axl Rose might advise us, all we need is just a little patience.
Well, and actually, I agree 100%. I think actually a couple weeks ago, that was my very quick parting shot as well. It's a long season. You know, you're never as good as you think you are when you win, and you're never as bad as you think you are when you lose. And I think that's still the case with this team because they're, you know, I'm not sure their identity has really been made yet, what they're really about. And, you know, if Bradford can start getting a little bit better and they can run the ball a little bit better, then obviously they're going to be good. And if that doesn't work out, then they're not going to be good. So,
and yes, I subconsciously stole your parting shot from a few weeks ago. Sorry about that.
No. That's okay. Hey, my quick parting shot is to the Philadelphia fans, but I'm not talking Eagles fans. I'm talking to Philadelphia football fans in the Delaware Valley. Get out, get off a couple dollars. It's a cheap way to do things on a Saturday night, and go see the Temple Owls. They play at home this weekend. Go see them, support them. Start putting people in the seats out there at Lincoln Financial Field as this team gets a little bit better and big crowds help recruiting and all that, and go out and support the Owls.
Yes.
All right. So, hey, Chet, as we get to the top of the hour, let's thank our special guest, Inquirer award-winning writer Mike Sielski, also Carl's Cards and Collectibles, for the continued support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kiss for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show. And we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, October 21st at 7 p.m. with our special guest, Calkins Media 76ers beat writer Tom Moore. Joins us to kick off the NBA season. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the Internet, www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio, and now on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.